Welcome to Worlds Apart. From cancel culture to the canceling of culture, the Western boycott on all things Russian has led to a paralysis of artistic exchanges, further amplifying the schism created by diplomatic animosity and economic sanctions. But given that music or dance have always been able to permeate language and ideological barriers, aren't they indeed powerful influence tools to be controlled or, if needs be, neutralized? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Yuri Bashmet, a Russian conductor and a world-renowned violist.
Yuri Abramovich, Mr. Bashmet, thank you for finding the time.
Thank you for having me.
Over the past couple of years, much has been said about cancel culture, especially the attempts to cancel high Russian culture in the West. In Russia, this is often dismissed as clumsy and ridiculous. But I'm sure you will agree that culture, especially music, has the power to directly influence the human soul, its subconscious part as well as the conscious one, and is therefore an effective tool of leverage. So my question is this ban on Russian culture really so irrational?
I feel certain that good musicians still play Russian music. Russian plays are still being staged. Where there is high art, there cannot be any cancellation. And those who have cancelled something, I don't want to insult anybody, but what they've done is stupid. They're simply morons, because cancelling Russian music means cancelling a great part of the human soul in general. It doesn't matter what nationality you are or where you live. It's easy to see why they did it. They're politicians, but some politicians are smart people with a lot of soul and a taste for music, while others have no such taste but are focused on hating Russia, and they're prepared to go all the way. I think it's stupid.
So, do you think it's plain stupidity, really, or do you believe there's some motive, like limiting access to Russian performers, because they may be still playing some Russian music, but access to Russian performers is severely limited in the West?
You know, there are lots of Russian musicians who have been living abroad for a long time, but still, they were educated and taught here in Russia. And I think that listeners can still understand the true spirit of Russian music.
Until recently, the segment of Russian culture most popular in the West was high culture, like music, ballet, or fine arts. And such things usually require a certain depth. They're usually geared towards not just intelligent people, but people with a great depth of perception. Do you think that this kind of empathy, this ability to distinguish between the fine nuances of meaning, is something that's still relevant in the world today?
I think as long as we live, the subtle feelings will remain relevant. Because when we, well, quote-unquote, transition to AI, then we can meet again and discuss this. As long, however, as our intelligence is human, not artificial, as long as we are living people, that will remain relevant. Emotions, the complex structures of our souls, our faith, our minds, this connection, talking about artists and musicians, this connection between the rational approach and the physiological one, where your brain controls your hand movements, for instance, or actors and singers' intonation, That's still something that's far away from what AI can do.
You mentioned AI, which is a perfect segue to my next question. A person can be taught the right way to think. The art or craft of propaganda is about teaching people to think in a certain way. Do you think it's possible to teach people the right way to feel?
Well, if we teach everyone the right way to feel, that would, of course, be a major leap towards artificial intelligence. On the contrary, each person, based on the sum total of his or her unique characteristics, where they were born, how they were raised, what they experienced in their childhood, what joys or sad moments they experienced, their health, their understanding of what's good and what's bad, what their mom and dad taught them. My mom, for example, tried to figure out what I was interested in. Well, since I probably didn't show a particular interest in anything, she kept trying different things with me, like painting, sports. By the way, I used to do fencing. I was a promising young fencer. But then someone told my mom that fencing was bad for my wrists, because they lose the flexibility they need to play the violin, to manipulate the bow. So my mom made me stop going to fencing practice. Well, I just remembered that my childhood music teacher still teaches in Odessa. Her last name is Mertsalova. She doesn't go to the conservatory anymore. She has students come to her place. She's quite old, as you can imagine. Well, that music school is named after the great Pyotr Stolarsky, who is part of the Russian violin school, which in turn has influenced many legendary violinists in the West and the United States, among other countries.
Do you think people still remember that today? That cross-pollination between cultures? Because it's hard to deny that Russian culture has influenced world culture, and yet we see what's going on.
That's a great question, because if you cancel Russian culture, well, you must cancel its influence as well. And that would mean suspending, means halting cultural development. And that's a really good question. I believe that the power of the Russian music school is its mentality, to use a trendy term. The advantage of the Russian school is musical thinking. That's what it is. It's our tradition that has been handed down by great musicians.
A great artist is not just someone who has a great technique, but is always a unique personality, an innovator and a maverick, if you will. I have actually heard the saying that a great artist is an instrument that the inspiration plays on. And your career is proof of that. But you were born into a family that wasn't musical at all. You just mentioned that your mother tried to figure out what your talent and your calling were. So what would be your advice to our viewers, who may be not musicians, on how to still drink from that spring of inspiration to feel fully alive at 70?
First off, there are many documents, by which I mean records. Today we're talking about microchips, yesterday it was CDs, vinyl records. I don't think that someone who has no connection to music will just go ahead and buy a record of a performance by a legendary musician. So that's not the way. What's my advice? Be a wise mom or dad. I've told you about the Stolarsky school in Odessa, which is still there, and Stolarski said, "I don't need talented children. I need talented mums and dads, of course. My parents were not musicians, but my mom had a great ear for music. She took some piano lessons when she was young, and I asked her why she'd given them up. And she said she didn't have enough patience for long practice sessions. As for my dad, he worked with electronics, but he had a great voice. So as soon as it turned out I had some musical ability, my granddad immediately sent over a piano, because a kid learning music can't live in a home without a piano. And my dad, who got tired at work, of course, would still tell me, after coming home from work, 'Have you learned how to play something yet? Let's go.' And I would accompany him on the piano, playing by ear. So you need talented parents who want their children to live interesting lives."
My first question was about the attempts to cancel Russian culture that were prompted by the crisis in Ukraine. And as far as I know, you spent your childhood in Western Ukraine, and your parents and your grandfather are buried there, if I'm not mistaken. And now you're banned from entering Ukraine.
I don't know. I never tried to.
Well, there are media reports saying that you've been banned from entering. What's your personal take on it? I heard you say in your interviews that you aren't affected much by cancelled tours in the West, but what about...
I don't see them as cancelled. I see them as postponed.
I guess they might end up being postponed for decades.
Well, on top of that, I have also imposed my personal sanctions. I don't want to name particular cities or countries, but there are some places where I could go with a concert, but I just don't want to. I don't want to, because those people who'd like me to come and perform there haven't done much, perhaps, to influence their local governments to cancel this whole cancel culture thing.
And if I may get back to my question about Ukraine, is it important to you to be able to go there and visit your parents' graves, or...
You know, I'm still waiting for this whole situation to come to its natural resolution. And once it does, I will surely go there. But if it continues for too long, I'll have the graves moved to Moscow. I have all the means to do it.
Maestro, we have to take a very short break now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Yuri Bashmet, a Russian conductor and a world-renowned violist. Yuri Abramovich,
Mr. Bashmet, I was planning to ask you a few more questions about Ukraine, but not political ones, since you spent your childhood years in Lvov. It's the city that's to a large extent responsible for the present-day antagonistic attitude towards Russia. And this is something really hard to understand, because the Ukrainian Socialist Republic was getting more financial support from the central government in the USSR than any other. Ethnic Ukrainians held offices of power. Nikita Khrushchev transferred Crimea to Ukraine. Where do you think this profound dislike for all things Russians comes from? because it didn't just start in 2014. It's been building up for many years, even decades.
Well, first of all, I wasn't born in Lviv. I was born in Rostov-on-Don.
You were 5 when you moved there, that's right.
And when I turned 5, Lviv is an incredibly beautiful city, and they have great music school and traditions at their conservatory. You've probably heard of the Golden Ring. It includes Salzburg, Lemberg, that's Lviv now, and also Dresden, I think, and Görlitz, a total of 5 cities. And all world-famous musicians would visit the conservatories in these cities several times a year to give what we now call master classes. You know, Mozart taught such classes centuries ago. Not the famous Mozart, but either his father or his son, one of them. So what Lviv had to offer in terms of music education was superb. And the city was beautiful and had its own traditions. You know, it's not like Poland, nor is it like Austria, although of course it's been influenced by Austria-Hungary. But I do remember from my childhood years that they had a bad attitude towards Kyiv. And that was because in Lviv's opinion, Kyiv did not put up any serious fight against Moscow. Kyiv was well integrated into the USSR. Well, Lviv, you know, when German troops entered the city, they met no resistance. Quite the contrary, the local people welcomed them because they saw them as liberators. Liberators from the Soviet authority. They had this kind of, let's say, pro-Western thinking from the very start. And when I was attending a music school there, there was a class for Russian-speaking children. But everyone else spoke Ukrainian. We also had Ukrainian classes at school.
But we all have our own way of thinking and speaking, even in Russia. A lot of places have their own sub-dialects, traditions, but it doesn't involve any sort of hostile attitude towards our neighbors.
What Ukrainians want, I think, is simply to be Russian. Well, I'm sorry if this may sound improper in today's atmosphere. I think they want to be the first, to be number one, not number two. And that's all there is to it. But we are the same people. How many families out there are like this? A Russian husband, a Ukrainian wife, or vice versa, and they've got children? Well, overall, I think it's a very complicated process that's happening today. There's an economic issue, which explains why this bubble finally burst. But the bubble has always been there.
You said that in Lviv, Russians were, shall we say, not always treated in a friendly way. But in Salzburg, which you also mentioned, things might be moving in the same direction. I wanted to mention Salzburg because it was there that you had a chance to play Mozart's own instrument. You were given that honor as someone who made a unique contribution to the history of music, proving that the viola can also be a solo instrument. That was in 1990, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think a concert like that would be possible today, both on your part and on the part of Austria?
Anything is possible. There was a time, I don't remember the years exactly, when the relations between the Soviet Union and the United States were incredibly tense. And I believe I was a first-year student at the conservatory at that time. But it was also then would invite legendary Soviet musicians. I know Emil Gilels and Leonid Kogan would go there, and some of the younger ones too, I think, even though no one else could perform abroad. But that was done exclusively at Carnegie Hall as part of a contract. And that is why I say everything is possible, even today. The question is whether it's necessary, whether the person himself wants to go. As for the concert in Salzburg, yes. I was fortunate to be the first person in more than 200 years to be given that opportunity to hold Mozart's viola in my hands, to play it. In a wonderful coincidence, his viola turned out to be a brother of my own instrument. They were both made by the same viola craftsman, about 3 years apart. I don't remember which is older.
If you were offered the same opportunity today, would you take it? For personal reasons or perhaps for the sake of cultural diplomacy?
If Yuri Gagarin were alive now, and he were offered to go to Mars, what would he do?
I don't know.
Well, me neither. Well, I know I am maybe being immodest here, but Gagarin is my namesake after all. We're all somewhat of a Gagarin at heart, you know. We all want to be champions, to be number one in sports, in music, in art. At our festival here, 9 years ago, we came up with a competition for young composers. We've received 69 applications so far, and one of the winners, by the way, was a Ukrainian.
Is it safe for him to go back home now?
I think he's in Moscow at the moment, but he still has a Ukrainian passport. He never changed it. I haven't met him personally, but everyone spoke very highly of him. I think he won the second prize, though I could be wrong.
You always wear your pendant with St. George, and St. George is revered by the Russian Orthodox tradition as the patron saint of the Russian army. Although he defeated the dragon, he died a martyr's death for refusing to recant his faith in favor of the Roman gods, at least according to the Christian tradition. I wouldn't be the one to draw parallels here, but in some way it seems to me that Russia is now also fighting for its faith, for its cultural and historical legacy, as well as for the right to choose its own path. But that's what I think. I am wondering, what is your view on this? How do you see the present-day conflict in this kind of spiritual context?
Just please don't laugh. I'd say that it could end simply with a wave of a magic wand if Vladimir Putin were the president of Europe, all of Europe.
Please don't scare our viewers.
And then of America and the entire world, because he personifies the good. Today's conflict is not about evil fighting evil. It's about the good. The good as we see it, of course. And I certainly understand that while America wants to rob Europe of this opportunity and make it pay twice the price or even more, but all this about the market. And yet there are also people everywhere. We've got governors in every district and lots of ethnicities, and our president is doing an excellent job managing them all. I mean, it wouldn't make much of a difference if he got to manage France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and so on. And they were very complimentary about him at the very beginning, because no one has a president like this, no one.
I think President Putin has no ambitions to rule Europe.
Well, I will ask him to, you know.
Well, I think he'll probably say no even to you.
But he'll have a good laugh. He's got a terrific sense of humor.
But it's a serious question, and you as a person distinguished with multiple international awards, including a Grammy, are very well acquainted with Western culture and its mentality. So why do you think it's so hard for Western Europe and for the West in general to accept Russia as it is? If not in terms of partnership and cooperation, then at least in terms of acknowledging that we're equally valuable, that we have the right to be the way we are.
Why do I think they think that? Well, we should probably ask them. Because, you know, if you ask me, all I can give is my opinion of them. For example, I like French wine and haute cuisine. They're excellent. I like Italian wine and food. The wine is amazing. Their food is very good and more natural than in France. I like Italian fashion. In Tokyo, when you're riding an elevator and Tchaikovsky on the way down, despite the fact that Japan is now not very friendly to Russia.
Or they simply did not reset the settings yet? Or I don't know who wrote this music.
Well, I can't say, but they like it a lot. And they like Chopin, too. They love piano music, so what do they think about us? They probably think of the Kremlin's domes, that people drink vodka here, What else?
They also think that Russia represents the opposite of freedom, that Russia is a rather regressive, backward nation with no freedoms. And so I wanted to ask you, as a person representing the culture at its highest, can high culture exist without freedom? And what is freedom in the context of Russian culture?
Full freedom, combined with a lack of taste, that produces anarchy, I think. And that's vulgar. And if a person has a taste, and that's something everyone must hone and improve throughout their lives, you'll see it everywhere. And having tastes means you have certain reasonable limits in your freedom. And that's what makes freedom different from anarchy. I believe Russia has more freedom of speech. Of course, you can cut this out. But as far as I understand, we have more freedom now than Germany. I know this because of all the festivals. They still invite performers from other countries if they're willing to come. They may have problems upon their return home. Though some of them already did.
And perhaps my last question. As we see now, this attempt to cancel culture is no longer applied to Russian culture only. But, for instance, Theodor Kurenzis, who is Greek, is getting his participation in concerts cancelled, mainly through the initiative of Ukrainian musicians under various pretexts. What do you think this process can eventually result in? What kind of resolution can we expect?
I think the best answer to your question will be if I tell you a story of what happened to me in Salzburg. That was some time before the Ukrainian conflict, but after the thing with Crimea. I had a concert scheduled with the local Mozarteum Orchestra. The performance went very well. We were to play one of Schubert's symphonies as a second act. The public was very welcoming. We were a huge success. And then one person went up to the stage and stood in front of it with a slogan. I don't know what it said, but he was shouting something very loudly. The audience tried to boo him into silence, like, why? What's this? The musicians of the orchestra, it wasn't my orchestra, it was the local orchestra. They had been working so hard for a week to perform under my guidance, and we achieved a success. It was great. The audience kept applauding, and so I came out on stage again. But the man kept standing there with his slogan, shouting. I think it was about Crimea, and he was probably asking me why I support this. But I never even noticed. I remember going to the beaches of Crimea as a kid with my mom. But after that, I'd never had invitations to perform a concert in Crimea. And I started getting invitations to perform there only after Crimea joined Russia. And that's when I realized that all that time, before Crimea wasn't Russian, it wasn't mine as well. And so my answer to you is, back then I thought, what should I do? Came on to that stage for the eighth time. And I picked up my music sheets of Schubert's symphony and put them over my head. The audience stood up, there was a storm of applause, and the police took that man away. The only thing that can save us is what lifts your soul and makes it bigger, and that's classical music, first and foremost. And speaking again, President Putin is a big fan of classical music. He listens to it on the plane, and he takes piano lessons and really wants to play better and better. I've heard him play myself.
I'm sure this won't make him any more popular in the West, but in any case, this is...
Who cares about popularity in the West? What matters is our country's unity.
Thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.